Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
On the one and only Renegade Broadcasting. This is the 4th of October, 2013. I want to welcome you all to yet another edition. This is none other than the 21st edition of this broadcast. Going over some very rather epic ideas and topics. As always on this network, we tackle things that no other people will dare touch. This, the 21st broadcast, is titled Baroque Priorities and Art Deco Ambitions on the Goy Plantation. The Goy Plantation, a phrase utilized by Mike Sledge in the past, and it's not hard to decipher what he means by that. This planet conquered by Jewish corporations, the Jewish twist on Western civilization, what it means to be white. This is, of course, a global conflict, having its flashpoints in certain countries like Greece. We'll be going over today the concept of holiness, the diversity in this world, both biological and cultural. We'll be going over the importance of history and the importance of culture, and then, of course, the educational system, of which I may lend a few words of experience and some stories and anecdotes that I think you'll all find at least interesting, and especially the older folks who have no idea how bad it is, or just have heard some things. I can assure you that I had the worst of it towards the end of my education. We'll be getting into the fine details of that. But first, I'd like to go over to our today's resident composer, none other than Georg Friedrich Handel, who is a German composer who composed for the House of Hanover. We can go over the history on that individual at another time, but so we'll play that movements 1 to 2 from his Concerto Grosso No. 1. And we'll come back, we'll look at the history of today's date, and then start with the topics. As always, the phone lines are wide open. may call in at any time during this broadcast. Lend your questions and your comments. Please don't hesitate to call. That number is 347-633-9657. 347-633-9657. This is Ragnarok Now on Renegade Broadcasting.
Thank you.
And we're back. Oop. Handle's not done. Alright. Well, that's enough. That was the Slovak Orchestra, the Chamber Orchestra, playing Concerto Grosso No. 1, HWV 319 by Handel. And on today's show, as with the bulk of my broadcast, I would like to go over the events of October the 4th. October the 4th, 1537, the first complete English language Bible, the Matthew Bible, is printed, with translations by William Tyndale and Miles Coverdale. 1636, the Swedish army defeats the armies of Saxony and the Holy Roman Empire at the Battle of Wittstock. In 1830, the creation of the state of Belgium after the separation from the Netherlands. In 1853, during the Crimean War, the Ottoman Empire declares war on Russia. 1910, declaration of the Portuguese Republic. King Manuel II flees to the United Kingdom. In 1936, the Battle of Cable Street. British police protecting a march by the British Union of Fascists battles Jews and Communists in the East End of London. In 1940, meeting between Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini at the Brenner Pass. In 1943, the Posen speech purportedly delivered by Heinrich Himmler. 1957, the launch of Sputnik 1, the first artificial satellite to orbit the Earth. 1966, Basutoland becomes independent from the United Kingdom and is renamed Lesotho. And in 92, there was a very bad crash in Amsterdam, killing 43 people and 39 people on the ground. And a couple of famous births as well. We have 1626, Richard Cromwell, Lord Protector of England, Scotland, and Ireland. Oh, yes, protected it very well. Mm-hmm. Right. 1822, Rutherford B. Hayes, the 19th President of the United States, is born. 1861, one of my favorite artists of all time, Frederick Remington, who's an American painter, was born. In 1890, Benjamin Friedman, American nationalist and anti-Zionist Jew, was born. 1892, Engelbert Dollfuss, Austrian politician, was born. 1903, Ernst Kaltenbrunner, German military officer, born. And as well as H. Rapp Brown, a Black Panther, and Chuck Hagel, 1946. Yeah, that was off of, as usual, Metapedia, the source for some old knowledge about history and all sorts of topics through a white lens, as opposed to the dominant Wikipedia, which dictates knowledge today. Now, in today's show, I wanted to tackle the topic of holiness, the concept of sanctity, of being sacred. What makes one sacred? What makes something sacred? The actions and individuals regarded as holy have been undoubtedly twisted for millennia in the West. The church, of course, has had the semantic and cultural monopoly on this. The titles borne by the church hierarchy reflects this and its ridiculous nature. The bishops, papal authorities, as well as the local clergy were granted titles and are granted titles that worked against reality. An ideally pure priest was devoid of progeny, was called father, and so on. So somebody who's not even supposed to sire any children is supposed to be regarded as father and this wise spiritual force and community leader. Whereas the community leader in a European setting, in a Slavic tribal setting, or in a Germanic setting, in a Celtic setting, who would be the community leader? It would be some druid or shaman or chieftain who they themselves probably had a whole bunch of children, a whole house, a whole plot of land, a whole clan of their own to protect. But instead, Europe went on for hundreds and hundreds of years with the clergy, the childless clergy, who was constantly pushing the holiness of the Jewish martyr Yeshua as the Messiah, who died for the sins of all the little Celtic children, all the little Gaelic children, and all the little Slavic children. He died for your sins. Please give us your money and your attention and your respect. Please refer to me as Father. I'm your Father now. So that, in a nutshell, is spiritually and culturally where our people went from the Christian era till now, where it's held in disregard, to say the least, by many, secondary to the will of the state. And today, what is the state in Europe, in the Western world? A gaggle of compliant and or completely complacent and guilty underlings of the Jewish program. I mean, look at the Greek leader, the mighty Greek leader that they have in Greece, that I'm sure will stay there his whole term. Yeah, they'll let him get away with that. Mm-hmm. I digress. Back to history now. The Pope was obeyed as the connection to the realm of Yahweh, paradise. Outside the control of Rome laid the patriarchs of the East. Although their struggle for power differed from the Pope's, they still held the monopoly on the spirit and the afterlife. We seek today for an alternative to the clerical and spiritual constructs of the Dark Age, the Kali Yuga, the Jewish Age. What I have always and always will regard as holy is what is whitest, so to say. The fanatic and righteous volunteers of the Golden Dawn say, whom risk their reputation and precious time to their countrymen, in the form of, perhaps, food distribution, is itself a holy act. Sacred behavior in the scope of the white struggle is best described as acts that directly serve your own nation, or better yet, the whole of your race. In other words, holy acts are ones that you go out of your way for your race. You volunteer for your race. Willingly. Consciously. With the race in mind. With your nation in mind. Now, such would bring me to the conclusion that the Pope and his followers of the High Middle Ages would be infidels. Why? The Catholics accepted war with Byzantium, an empire who had not only introduced the desert religion to the Oiropids, but acted as a bulwark afterwards against the Turks. And the thanks they received from His Holiness and the rest of the Christian so-called brethren, war and hatred, more racial fratricide. To go and respect these tired old vestiges of the Christian age is folly, in my opinion. We must now and forevermore regard those that willingly sacrifice for their nation and or race as holy men and holy women. Holiness is reserved and culturally bestowed upon those that have completely pure and good intentions and output for the race. I firmly believe that Mike Sledge was right a few months ago when he postulated a future synthesis of the Abrahamic faith. It seems, perhaps, especially in the wake of both the war drum beating for the semi-secular Syria and the Yid-complying words of the new Iranian president, that such may occur very soon. Christian and Muslim do-gooders and collaborators alike may align soon to rescue the chosen people from world hatred for such creatures. Ares is just about finished sharpening his sword, and Athena watches patiently for the grand Hellenic spark of sanctity from their people to help alight the still burning passion of all Oedipids in this age. In other words, the struggle of the Golden Dawn, what they represent, what they are doing in their own country, and what may transpire in Greece, will ignite a true holy war, a continent-wide, a global revolutionary period unlike we've never seen before. Because perhaps the presidency, or at least the media here, in these United States, would be quick to beat war drums against a European country, Greece perhaps.
We must stop these evil Nazis. Have you heard about the Nazis taking over in Greece? Oh my God, we really have to go to war with Greece now. I thought Syria was bad, but wow, I was watching CNN. And they were telling me all these things. Wolfie Blitzer, he had so many things to say. Oh, I'm so scared of the evil neo-Nazi skinheads in Greece. They're going to hurt the poor immigrants. Like, I can't handle it.
And, you know, the same stupid sympathies, such as that, may be reverberated throughout the Western world. Fools in Russia and Germany and Austria and perhaps Italy and Spain and England and Australia and United States will be quick to judge these people because of the symbols they bear, because of what they stand for, because of what they've said on the floor of the parliament. That these Golden Dawn people deserve all the punishment in the world, all the degradation, all the cultural hate spewed from the leftist media. And perhaps it'll get much, much worse, these hateful words towards these Greek patriots from all the media outlets in this country. Why? Because perhaps there'll be a civil war there, and we know how much the presidency and the so-called elite of this country love to convince the American people to be just fine with invading another country who's having a civil war, whose civil war was probably sparked off by American and British and Israeli intelligence. Right? Did you just look at the receipts? I mean, if you trust, if you're a Briton, if you're an American, and you trust your government, what they say about other countries in this day and age, I don't know what to tell you. I don't. I have no words for you. You're still stuck in this sort of thought where things can be debated and reasoned with. We must reason with the immigrants and convince them to become proper British citizens and accept Jesus Christ and join the Presbyterian Church and We must also, I mean, there's another thing, too. Mike was rather heated yesterday, and he was saying how watering down our message really doesn't get us anywhere, and I wholeheartedly agree with him. I haven't for one second doing these broadcasts for nary few months now. Never once relinquished my opinions, and never watered down my message, my opinions on many topics that are the scariest topics for many Americans to get into, that is race mixing and the Holocaust, the end of World War II, and the Third Reich in general. I'm not going to, in a public setting, in a speech, perhaps, sort of kowtow to the citizenry. The best of the citizenry deserve better. They deserve the truth. And they'll be accepting it if they're worthy, if they have the courage, if they are proper patriots. They will take it upon themselves. Research what I'm saying and what others have said so much over the decades before I was even born, and really realize and try to grasp the epic scale of this struggle of ours. And many, many, many citizens are unable to deal with these topics, and they wave it off. They call you names. All names and labels supplied by the propaganda, the Jewish propaganda factories that love worldview war as long as they get to control the worldview war, get to control who's the biggest hater out there. And, you know, Mike was going over that as well. Again, a sacred person, a holy person, is those that are on the streets keeping white people safe who can't defend themselves, people putting their reputation on the line, their careers in this Jewish world into the waste bin, becoming full-on cultural warriors, never, ever, ever taking a step backwards in terms of their opinions, in terms of their worldview, which is the correct worldview. A racial one is the only one that white people need to give any credence to at all. Period. Again, what are we debate? What can we debate? There's nothing to debate. Nothing. Dozens and dozens and dozens of stories per month about horror stories from London, from Paris, from Berlin, from Stockholm, from Moscow, from Athens, about these immigrants, illegal or otherwise, who just love to blow off steam, these youths, who have killed our people en masse, or otherwise, affected their lives, either ended them, and thus causing disarray and despair that I myself have never felt among their own families, and I'm powerless to stop it. But the Golden Dawn, oh, they're evil, yes. Yes, the most evilest people in the world, the people who want to protect their race and their nation, their mighty nation. Yes, they are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. It's not the Jews in the media and the Jews in the banks, the NGOs, wasting millions of dollars on a TV commercial selling kosher-approved butter or beer or a car or something. They spend millions of dollars per commercial to sell you a product to get you yapping about the funniness of the commercial and start discussing it with the rest of your comfortable white swine. No, we're the evil people. We're the people who have no money to waste on these ad campaigns or film projects, multi-million-dollar film projects. They spend their money on film projects. We spend our money on, we as in the third position, the racialists. What do they spend their money on? Simple t-shirts and bags of food for their people. And maybe some equipment to start a radio show. Yet we're the evil ones. We're the bad guys. We're the ones that deserve all the hatred in the world. No, not the people who squander millions of dollars a day. No. Uh-uh. Not the people who go out of their way to distract and program the people of the earth, not just whites. No. Mm-hmm, right. So I'll be coming back to this topic, that is culture creation and the importance of it, what it means. And this very much concerns the Yehudim, because they pride themselves on the very fact that they control it. They brag about it. We know this. There's no debating this. This is trying to wake up some of these people and telling them about the Jewishness, the kosherness of the media in general, in the world, in America alone, is so ridiculous. There's no debating these things. So we'll come back to the culture talk. I'll come back and talk about race in general. So we'll go for a music break here. And I suppose it's time for another Concerto Grosso. This is HWV 328. Yes, that's it. All right, and we'll be back in a few short minutes. This is Ragnarok Now on Renegade Broadcasting. Yes, thank you, Georgie. Yes, that was the Concerto Grosso in D minor, HWV 328. This is Ragnarok Now, again, coming back to you live from the cultural capital of the world, Long Island, New York. One of the most mixed, wild, drug-loving, multi-cult-loving, patriotic, flag saluting places in the world. Wow, what a place. Jews running around everywhere. Jews smiling at me and joking. And then Jews not even giving me eye contact. And I'm, of course, speaking about customers at my Jew job as exercising my skills as a cashier, yes. Now, I'm not going to get into that now, the details of that. Now, let's turn to something more epic and important. That is race in general. Now, over the years, before I even started doing these things, that is, these broadcasts, I was well aware of race. Well aware. Focusing on cultural anthropology for my education, which we will get into towards the end of the broadcast. my education, my experience in the universities, it appears as though there are but 5 races on this planet, on the world. And by the way, that's what I used as the broadcast image for today. That is the 21st tarot card, the world. Just to help you realize that this is a global war. When Judea declared war on Germany, that was a declaration on the world. This is the Goy plantation, where all races are second to the mighty chosen people. The greatest, smartest, funniest, most innocent people in the world. Yes. All these races, now I always broke it down to 5 races, and within those races, many, many, many ethnic groups and ethnic blanket groups, which we'll get into when we speak about the Europeans. We have, again, 5 races. The Capoid, which are located in sub-Saharan Africa, Central Africa, really. And really focusing in on the, as well as Southwest Africa, the entities the German Empire had to deal with in their colonies back in the good old days in the 19th century. Capoids received that name from none other than, or at least it was fueled, their label was fueled by one Carlton S. Kuhn, one of the distinguishable names in racial and cultural anthropology, bioanthropology. The man studied physical traits of peoples all over the world. And, well, yes, Capoids, situated in today's world, parts of sub-Saharan Africa, but, you know, most of them found in the southeast part, southwest Africa. And now the ones that we know in America, the race that is said to have been saved and freed by Mr. Lincoln, the Negroid race, the African-American ethnicity, or group, or anthropological entity, is an amalgamation of many ethnicities of blacks, of Negroids, enslaved and brought over to the Americas, to Virginia, to Georgia, to Carolinas, bred with individuals, blacks from tribes they never ever would have before congregated with, and thus today we have the diversity of the African American group in general. But moreover, as to their place, who they are, they make up the bulk of the African race. They really are the African race, the one who supplies the bulk of the tribes that would be called indigenous African. And now we move on to another one of the 5 races, the Australoids. Today, relegated to arguably the Indian subcontinent, in the form of the Dravidian peoples, at least in part. But their main focus, racially, found in Papua New Guinea, that island, the island that's cut in half there, the eastern portion of the Indonesian archipelago. And then as well as the Aborigines of the Australian continent. And arguably New Zealand as well, but that's for the anthropologists to decide. Right, and these people, the Capoids, the Negroids, the Australoids, when you compare them to the next two races, on the scale of culture, on the scale of efficiency, of might, bare bones might, a comparison can scarcely be made. This is the truth. And now in the chat room we have some phenotypical comments being made. We're not going to go there with this show. You may draw your own conclusions, but you know what I wanted to say before is that today in this, before we get to the mongoloid and the oiropids, the caucasoids, let me just say that it has pained me since I have researched race for myself back in 2001, 2002, and then on. Where would I find on the internet information besides these old scholarly texts on race? How would I research that? Oh, I could go to any number of racialist forums where you have the members identifying each other's race just by their looks and perhaps their ancestry. And the same done to celebrities and politicians. And look, you have a bunch of people totally unqualified to make such distinctions. People barely educated in these things, making these gross judgments on the racial makeup of an individual. People who probably never would be doing these things as a career, say if there was some sort of National Socialist government they would be as a citizen to, they wouldn't be given the job of cultural anthropologist or racial taxonomist or whatever. Yet they waste their time on these forums trying to identify people's races just by looking at a picture of them at a party or something ridiculous. It's just, oh, he obviously has brune skull line and jaw line, so he must be Irish or, you know, any number of these meanderings. And some people absolutely are qualified to make such calls and do, and okay, but to waste your time on this all day and where you wouldn't be doing these things normally, it's a waste of time. So to the people who are new to these things, who are new to race in general, as a phenomena, as the immutable truth of this, our human existence, please don't waste your time. Please find someone who knows what they're talking about, who has studied these things. Because a degree can be still yielded by the university in these respects, but not to the fullest, obviously. So find someone who's studied history, who's studied anthropology, and or both. And ask them about these things, because this is not an easy thing to just go and study and figure out for yourself. It's not that simple. Race is very simple, it's very clean cut, and we know who's who. However, wasting your time and figuring out who has the most Barebi injection, don't waste your time, please. There's things that you could be doing for the race that would be much more helpful, so to say, to the rest of us. Please forget about it. Just focus on your own race. And also, the one of the worst things of all, and although it's not like I'm not surprised by it, but, you know, going out of your way and saying, well, say you're Danish. Well, these people from Iberia and Calabria, oh, they're not white at all. They were all raped by the Moors, and they're no longer white. Yeah. So So we have a whole bunch of these people, Europeans for centuries, of course, at least decades, when they had the chance to, arguing and bickering who's whiter and all this. So to those people and to the newcomers to this this worldview, all you need to know is that there are separate nations within the Oiropid race. Now you only have to worry about them. You only have to have the maturity to say, I recognize the separate nations of the Oiropids, and I recognize that they have the right to say what they will about the members of their ethnicity, which has been categorized already, who's German, who's Italian. Well, only the Italians and Germans may decide those things. Not anyone else. So that's the only thing newcomers need to worry about. Just different nations, different ethnicities, please. Do not, unless you're studying race and want to make it your priority and main focus, by all means. But if you're just some fascist hobbyist, please throw that out the window and don't bother with it, because you're just going to start internet flame wars and just really pointless stuff. Now, the other races, the one I have not mentioned yet, the Mongoloids, the East Asians, represented by the Chinese civilization, the Koreans, the Japanese, all with empires in their own right. They all had periods of mirth and opulence that we have had in the West, but in obviously a completely different way. Commonly in history, the Han Empire is compared to the Roman Empire, which were contemporaries of each other, with a single man at the apex politically, culturally, and religiously. The Emperor of China and the Emperor, the Kaiser of Rome. But what I really want to get at here is where the Mongoloids are, where they are located, who they are. Well, the Mongoloids, they think of their tribe, their ethnicity, their people first, their community. Now, this outlook, this racial outlook that they is just instilled in them from birth by their culture, sometimes their religion as well, if it hasn't been sullied by Buddhism, the Mongoloids look after their own first. They think their own are the best in the world. Do not want their people mixing. If they want to, and if they're in the American era, if they're around nowadays, they'll be fine with their college daughter in America dating a white guy. That's fine. Just don't date a Negroid, please, is what the Asian parents do say. Not that I know about that personally, but I know exactly what goes on with these Asian girls, and they get chastised by their fellow Asians that they're dating a white, but at the same time their parents are fine with it. Sometimes they aren't. But what you need to know about the Mongoloids is that they are, from our perspective, our white perspective, racial-minded, always have been. And these people, again, are located in the Japanese archipelago, the Korean Peninsula, mainland China, which itself is a giant entity in of itself with many ethnicities, but primarily hosted by the biggest ethnicity in the planet, the Han Chinese. And also the Mongoloids are the most plentiful in the world, just in Asia. Now, the Mongoloids had a dispersal period. About 14, or 15,000 years ago, about that long ago, when our people are said to have roamed the American continent, North America at least, and the Mongoloids did have an injection, an immigration process, so to say, by way of Siberia, and this laid the foundations for the aboriginal populations we have today. What became the Sioux, what became all the groups of the Pacific Northwest that you can find there on the islands and on the mainland. Huge amount of diversity in of that those groups of themselves, because once they left Asia, their adaptation to the completely different environments they were faced with when they arrived in America and finally settled in a certain place, be it modern-day New Mexico, Southern California, the Dakotas, these people may be racially close. However, these Mongoloids are now have been changed forever by their environment, by generations and generations of a new culture. The Mongoloids, they, again, are very racial. The Asian ones, in terms of their race, in terms of their culture, their overall culture, it is. And it is the most racial. But the leftists will always point this out and, you know, will pick apart of the Japanese and how evil they are, that they have sections of cities and buildings where it's Japanese only, not Asian only, it's Japanese only. They're a very ethnic-minded, a very nationalist, so to say, minded people, especially the Japanese, given their history, which we won't get into today, which I could, but I won't. So there's much to be said about the Mongoloids who we perhaps were aligned with, so to say, in World War II. But this is a simplification, and I won't gratify it with that. Now we move on to our people, the Oiropids, who they themselves are very diverse, but it's said that the Negroids themselves are the most diverse genetically, which is true. I've looked at it myself. The Oiropids, despite that fact, the Oiropids, they themselves are so utterly diverse in of themselves. This breeds conflict. This breeds, again, those armchair anthropologists on the internet saying who's white and who's not. I'm the authority on race. I am Rudolf Hess 88 420, and I know everything about race. You must listen to me in my long forum post about race. And right, again, all the newcomers need to know is that there are separate nations in Europe today with almost ethnically correct boundaries. The Imperium will see to it that each ethnicity is catered to, which is what we've always needed in Europe. Always. Tribal grounds being trodden upon by Germanic invaders and Roman invaders, and thus those Gaelic entities in Austria and Gaul were bred out and or completely destroyed by invaders. Germanics from the east and Italics from the south. And this, in a nutshell, is the genetic history of France. You see, nations are created in Europe By way of invasion, by way of war. And this is a fact that people don't like to get into. Europeans, this is the touchiest of subjects. And I'm in the pleasant position of an American to make whatever comments I will. I suppose that's the best best position to be in, because if I want to talk about race and I'm European, it's going to be rather messy, because you'll have all sorts of, say you're a Norwegian and you say something universalist, so to say, and they're all Nordicists. You'll get them all on your case, and you'll never get anywhere, and you'll just keep squabbling while the Africanoids and all other sorts of non-Europeans are in your country destroying it from the inside out. They'll keep arguing about race. Where if you're nationalist, you should be concerned about the nations. Worry about the genetic makeup. Worry about the racial makeup of your respected nations after the revolution has concluded. Because to worry about this, to bicker about it on a forum with the strongest of vigor is so ridiculous. I'm sorry to bemoan such a thing, but really has gotten on my case for a long time now. So now I'm just finally saying anything about it. But more about the Caucasoids. The Oidopids can be split up into many ethnic blanket groups. We have old groups. We call them old groups because they existed in their respected areas for a long time before any migration period or Slavic migration or something along those lines. They stayed in their territory almost unscathed genetically, perhaps, by the widespread movements of European peoples throughout the centuries. Now, we have the Basque people of Iberia, northern Iberia. We have Albanians. We have the Finns and the Estonians grouped up in these, and the Hungarians as well, grouped up in their own entities at times, their own ethnic blanket groups, due to their distinct language and genetic history. I won't get into the whiteness of them. I won't say such things, but I will at least make these observations that they belong to separate Oidopid groups of their own. And that's something also the newcomers need to understand, that white race is a very general, simplified term. I like saying white races when I can help it. White races, the Oidopids in general. Because there are the bigger versions of these blanket groups. I like to put into perspective, into one group, the Mediterraneans, the Greeks, the Maltese, the Italians, the Spanish, the Portuguese. These are the Mediterranean peoples, because of the geography, because of their relation ethnically. Well, we had the Greek influence in Sicily and Calabria and Puglia and Campania for centuries before the Roman Empire. So we have that genetic injection. But no, we can't talk about that. We have to talk about the Moors and how they forever changed Sicily and how it's not even white anymore because of the Muslims. I mean, give me a break. That place had infrastructure before Scotland did, that we know of. You know, Greeks colonizing that place and making it their own. I mean, and all these famous Greeks born in Sicily. They were Sicilians. So Sicily, and these are Mediterranean places. These nations, the Greeks, the Italians, are Mediterranean peoples. Now, further up north, we have other big groups, the Slavs and the Germanics. The Germanics having their homeland in northern modern-day Germany, Denmark, Scandinavia. And from there, they spread. They spread east to a point, to Prussia, made it their own in the 14th century, in the form of the Teutonic Knights, carving out that place, basically a colony for the German people. They spread east, the Germanics, they spread west, founded a new nation, ended up founding a new nation, not right away, of course, the so-called Anglo-Saxon people, the English people, one of the most mighty, creative people on the planet. And this wasn't just one tribe. This was an amalgamation of Germanic peoples. Then we also have the Netherlanders, the Hollanders, the Dutch, the Frisians, the Scandinavians, and southern Sweden, who are sometimes said to be a completely different ethnicity, although very close to the Swedish people in general, the Norwegians, the Normans, Eastern French natives with much Germanic injection because of the migration period. So France gets its name from its Germanic history. We also have the aforementioned Slavic peoples with their supposed homeland in Bohemia, smaller ethnicities splintering off, like the Sorbians. We have East Slavs, West Slavs, and South Slavs, like the Serbians. East Slavs, like, of course, the Russians. And West Slavs, like the Polish. And all these ethnicities in and of themselves have localized entities within their own nations, which they differentiate themselves culturally, and it's a very complex topic in of itself, the Polish ethnicity, the Russian ethnicity. It's just, especially the Russian ethnicity, it has a gigantic, and has had a gigantic place to spread out and create local entities, new ethnic subgroups, so to say. The Germans, same way. People, this escapes most people. They don't understand these things. Then we also have the Gaelic groups. The Britons in Brittany, which is northwest France. The old Cornish, located in modern-day Cornwall, England, southwest. In the eastern peninsula of Britain is Wales, where the Britons were all but pushed off from East Anglia and onward by the invading Germanic peoples, who created the aforementioned English ethnicity. Now, in Wales, they have their own ethnicity now. They still have their own language. They're their own nation, the Welsh. Then you have the Scottish, who they themselves, as I understand it, are an amalgamation of Gaelic peoples, bearing the name of a specific group hailing from Ireland originally, immigrating to the western portion of modern-day Scotland, the islands, the Highlands. Names like MacGregor conjure up the romantic view of the Scots, the clan mentality, the clan structure. Very Celtic, very Gaelic peoples, but a lot of Scots, some at least, and people outside of the Scottish ethnicity, the Scottish nation, like to say that the Scots are more Germanic because of the Viking invasions and all this, but when I look at Scottish people, when I look at the way they conduct themselves, they are a Gaelic people. Who have, of course, been influenced by the English very much. By way of religion, by way of politics, because they were galvanized into one political entity in 1700. That is the United Kingdom of Great Britain. And I'm not going to go too much into Scottish history. I'm just going to keep digressing from there because I can go all day with that. Yeah, you have the Scottish ethnicity today. Widespread diaspora. And then also, of course, you have the Irish ethnicity, which is a gigantic one today because of America, because of the British Empire. they needed cannon fodder. Oh, and they loved the fact that they could just capture a bunch of Irish and use them as cannon fodder as recently as the Civil War in America. Have their kids get their hands chopped off in factories. Because the loving capitalists in America. I'm digressing again. Yes, so in short, the racial makeup, the what makes the Oiropids is its grand diversity. You see, the Irish are different from the Greeks, very much so. Culturally, language, even religion. They're both Christian, but Catholics in Ireland, Greek Orthodox in Greece. They have their little ethnic religions. The Germanics, what do? They fought about it all the time. But they gave the non-Germanics and helped usher in an ethnic religion for each of them. The Russian Orthodox Church, the Scots had the Presbyterian Church. This is a Scottish entity, originally. So all the Church of England, too, but that's splintered off into Episcopalian and all that. But what I'm trying to say here is that the Germanics, who really founded America, they didn't have an ethnic religion to bound around, save for, what, Freemasonry or whatever, little boys club they could join and join the elite in America. But no, they had to squabble over Mennoniteism and Quakerism and all the Protestant faiths and have all that. But yes, the white races have been severed and granted the environment to make make a fratricide with each other, not just preferred, but needed. I mentioned Byzantium before, how we, in the West, the Catholics went to Greece, despite them being Christian. They were still infidels in the eyes of the Pope. Why? Because they were Greek Orthodox. So in the story of the West, we have a huge amount of diversity, ethnically, culturally, and now religiously, with the advent of the churches. And politically, too, we had all these separate states in Germany, separate states in Italy, and France, modern-day France, was three or four entities, the Burgundians, the King of France, in the Ile-de-France, the Normans, and then also what the Normans went on to own. Aquitaine, Normandy, was property of the King of England, the Angevins. So you had all these patchwork states and empires vying for control, and it never was about unity within the nation. Gods forbid, among the white races of the world, which were a minority even back then, even back during its golden era, the 16th to 20th centuries, our influence as a race is incalculable and undeniable to each race on the planet that I have mentioned today. And they know it. And the savvy, the elite of their races, understand who is the entity, the racial entity, that went out of its way to infiltrate our countries throughout history. They know who's to blame. And that brings me to the final portion of this racial talk, the Semitic peoples. Are they a race in of themselves? Well, the Jews themselves, today, and for years and years and years, refer to the Arabs as mixed peoples. That is all they are. to combat this, to understand this is, again, look at the world nationally. If you call yourself a nationalist, look at the world nationally. Now, we have separate Arab nations, which are ethnically Arab, yet have been localized over the generations and have created their own cultural identity in many places throughout the world. You go from Morocco all the way to Iraq, and there's all these, they're Arabs, but they have their own culture, essentially. So let's just think of them nationally. Syrian Arabs, Iraqi Arabs, Jordanian Arabs, Moroccan Arabs, Libyan Arabs. Okay? Jews hate all of these people. It's not about them being Muslim. It's about them being Goyim. Just like we're Goyim. All in the Goy plantation. All in this corporate world. Dictated by the foreign policy of the United States, which itself is lobbied to no end by Jews. Openly. Oh, and to criticize them in America. Oh, that's going too far. That's going anti-Semitic. You can't do that. WW says, but even if these differences were social, it's not the white man's burden to civilize these people. That's what I really wanted to conclude this talk on. I will finish now because I've been bemoaning this for too long. I think I've said my piece. Yeah, you have these Spanish conquerors paving the way for the Catholic Church to Christianize the natives of New Spain. We must make them Christian. We can make them white. But, you know, despite that, in New Spain, they were differentiated in a castizo system. America, the worst case scenario, we have all these goody-two-shoe do-gooders in America. Oh, we gotta Christianize the Indians. Put him in a church school. Give him a new name. You're Joseph Arimathea now, boy. Say hello to your new God. Oh yeah, it's Jesus Christ. You love him. He loves you, boy. As long as you follow the Ten Commandments. And not only is this a non-European religion when you get down to it. When you get down to its origin, it's been filtered out and made secondary even at that point in the 19th century, say, when we were Americans. We were trying to Christianize the native peoples and all this. Now we have all this history that the left uses and tries to denigrate our people in general. These are unworthy, pointless tasks because we know it has yielded. What has it yielded? A world of, not all of them, but certainly a bulk of them, especially in our own countries. They are totally ungrateful, totally take our ways for granted, and totally don't assimilate. They keep their religion, they keep their language, and they keep their disgusting ways of doing things. Disgusting ways of doing things. What am I referring to? Oh, how about the organized crime networks they just keep up and the rape jihad and the Negroid mentality of a boisterous attitude and all this, and it's not Western, so to say. So in short, make the white countries white. And with that message, we go to Handel yet again. This is Dixit Dominus, the first movement. Be back in 5 with some more talk about culture in general and what is lacking in both the movement and in our countries. This is Ragnarok Now on Renegade Broadcasting.
Yes, hello and welcome once again. This is PrisonPlanet.com, the Alex Jones radio program. This is Paul Joseph Watson reporting live for Alex. Alex is not here today to report for you. He's at the Rob Doobie Fest eating tacos and burritos. So I will be filling in for him for the duration of the 5-hour broadcast. Today we'll be talking about the greatness of the people in the truth movement. Nothing wrong with other races. We're all against the globalists. It's all about destroying the globalists. If anyone disagrees, like Norman Lowell, well, I suppose we can call them part of the New World Order, as Alex has time and time again. Those evil racialists, those want to be Nazis, who think they're so superior, saying the same things that Adolf Hitler used to say. Just like the eugenics Germanic death cult that has taken over the world. Alex would have much to say about this. He'd probably fly off the handle.
Alright. Sorry, that was Paul. He hijacked the broadcast. Now, I'm doing that because I'm want to belittle the truth of movement, because they deserve nothing short of that. What do I think about a bunch of rabble who tell me that my people, who took a stand in front of the entire world, socially, politically, against world Jewry, that they were evil, that they were bad, that, or at least they did bad things, they're to blame for the Holocaust? You know, I'm looking for a soundbite. It doesn't look like it's here. I think Blog Talk got rid of it, actually. That's really strange. Wow. All right, whatever. Well, I'll just give them my my reaction to what they say about the National Socialist, that is the Truth Movement, what they say about the National Socialist, about fascism in general, about eugenics. What do I say about their genetics in general? What's my comment on their, perhaps, the quality of their genetics? Yes, because what we need is standards. What we need is a culture, is a nation. In America, we have nations to build. In Europe, in the old world, they have nations to preserve. In the new world, we have the opportunity to speak about these things, to establish new ways of thinking about things, new paradigms, political paradigms. In Europe, they have but one. Their nations. And we will aid them in what way we can. Some of us have money, not everybody. But, you know, it doesn't help anybody to parrot what the truth movement has you believe. It is always, almost always, as far as I can tell, and it seems so if Alex Jones, the head honcho, is saying so, and his ilk, saying that everyone's equal, everyone's, you know, this is, you know, libertarianism 101. You know, everyone has the potential to do what they want and should do what they want and not care about the rest because you're your own individual, man. Yo, man, you want to read some Ayn Rand with me, yo? And the libertarians they cater to in the truth movement, they galvanize both the very conservative Americans who are fed up with each party, which I proposed last week. If we had one white demographic party, one party representing the white demographic, and which would have the whole of the racialist parties today galvanized into one gigantic party representing the white American demographic, we have the people who would be at least sympathetic to that political entity, racial entity. We have those people satiated and distracted by things like Alex Jones's show and all the libertarian nonsense. The other portion of the truth of movement people are people I don't want anything to do with. The hardcore cultural Marxists who their so-called fellow patriots, the aforementioned libertarian-ish conservative white Americans, those people wouldn't want anything to do with these cultural Marxists. You know, Adam Kokesh flavored dupes. What a joke. And on 3810 says, ain't got time for that. That's for show. I don't have time for these ideological whelps, these cultural fiends who I have no camaraderie with. Nothing to say to them. Nothing to debate. What am I going to debate with them? What am I going to even say? I don't even know where to start. So we have this call. I think he or she called in before, and I did not pick it up. I regret that. But now we shall turn to the phone line to 423, the single caller we have today. 423, you are live on Ragnarok Now.
Okay,
hello.
Yeah. Siegfried?
Yes, Jim?
Siegfried, you hear me?
Yes.
You hear me okay?
It's fine, yeah. I think you might have to just put your mouth to the mic there a little closer or whatever, but yeah, you're good.
How's this? Is this a little bit better?
A bit? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I like what you're saying. Yeah, you have a really a great show tonight, and well, you have a good show every night. And,
thank you.
Here's the thing, though. Now, as far as Alex Jones, you know, I mean, yeah,
sure.
The guy is definitely on. I mean, he doesn't tell the whole truth. I mean, he talks about the Nazis, he's negative about eugenics, but he is telling the truth about some things, like about 9/11, for example, and
mm-hmm.
about the how he's always supporting the wrong side in these wars. So I can't say that I totally disagree with him. And as far as the
oh,
truth
yeah.
movement, we are the truth movement. I mean, it's not them doing it. I'd say they were the partial truth movement.
Yeah.
We are the total truth movement because we tell the truth about everything.
Yes, Jim, and that is crucial. I would like to agree with you, I guess I could say on that. The thing is that the people who get stuck in the truth movement, so to say, they don't understand that race is the center of all things. Race is what spurs these cultures and countries in the first place. This republic, that white Germanic gentleman created, okay? Like,
yep.
They'll acknowledge that, but won't take the cultural and racialist step to acknowledge it as what started these things in the first place. In order to restore such a thing, you need such men to do so. And the truth of a movement's a bunch of miscreants. So that's all I'm really saying.
Here's the thing. See, now when I came into, I started with Jared Taylor with American Renaissance.
Right,
and then from there I got into the National Alliance, but I mean it's sort of like a gateway, you know.
Yes.
It's like a lot of people back in the 60s got into racial rights, like Dr. Pierce with the John Birch Society.
Right.
I mean, as long as they're questioning this society, because people know there's something wrong, but they don't know exactly what it is. So they get Jared Taylor or or Alex Jones and all these other people who only tell a partial truth, but they're from there they start thinking, I don't think he's telling the whole truth. Well, this is for something else. It's either, that's the whole thing. These people are not totally on our side. They're not totally against us either. Okay?
Yeah, this is true, but it's frustrating from my angle because I see all the squandered time and money, and then to think of all the millions of people who are misled and are stuck that way. And I personally know a lot of these people, Jim. I know a lot of, like, libertarians.
Oh,
yeah, okay. So, but you know what I'm saying, but you know, go ahead, Jim.
Well,
But,
you know, getting back to the racial thing, Siegfried, do you think it's possible for a person to be an Aryan and still have some non-white admixture? Would that be or do you have to be totally all-white to be considered an Aryan?
Well, my take would probably be the most hardcore one. However, I myself, by many people, perhaps wouldn't be considered such because of my 1/4 injection of Siciliano blood. Therefore, I am in no position to say such, although I would like to take the most hardcore, so to say, approach and say yes. But Aryan is more... I see Aryan as a synthesis of nobility and blood. So it's a hard thing to answer. There were Jews in the Third Reich who were more worthy of even living near the Reich than some of the whites who were open communists and working against Germany. And spying on their mother country, like actual ethnic Germans who fought against their country, and they were the non-noble, they were in blood their own people, but by nobility they were the enemy. So it's always a convoluted thing with each individual. Yes.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard to put people in boxes. You know, I mean, like Brother Nathaniel. I mean, he really takes off against the Jews. You know, he's a Jew himself. And look at with the Benjamin Friedman. So I mean, you know, it's so difficult to really. And then, have you read Madison Grant, The Passing of the Great Race?
No, I have not. I know of it though.
Okay, well, it's a good book. I think it was put out in 1915, and he claims that the Nordic race is the only pure white race, and the Mediterranean are a combination of white and Negroid, and the Slavs are a combination of white and Asian, or Mongoloid. So I mean, I don't know if he's right on that or not. But I mean, now, see, like here where I live, there's a lot of people, so-called white people, have a lot of Indian blood. I have a tiny bit of Indian blood in me myself, or they might have some Negroid and admixture. But we still consider them white. And so many people, I see, it's really hard to know if they're really white, or I mean, so many people are off white. And I mean, if we had our own Aryan nation, how would we? How would we have to, people have to go before a board if they were so iffy and just decide whether or not they're white enough? I mean, it's just, you know, it's just so confusing to break it down and who is white and who is not, who is an Aryan, who is not Aryan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And just to make a comment on that, you know, the Australians, they had a whole batch of half-caste children, that is, half Aborigine, half white. Most likely English or Scottish, say, and they sought out to outbreed that blood within them and breed them with whites over the generations, so as that their future grandchildren were now white kids. So I mean, Varg Vigernes has even said how he thinks the Third Reich was really, really it wasn't strict enough, so to say. I forget the words he chose to describe it, but he thought that the racial policies of the Third Reich were not as tough as suppose his opinions are. So we in the West have been, because of World War II, politically, culturally, hardened and tempered to the point where this revolution is imminent, where our racial ideals are far surpass the ideals of even the 40s back then, because we know what happened, we know who was to blame, We know the solutions, and the problems are worse than they ever were in history. So everything,
absolutely.
Yeah, everything has been guided in a way to foster stronger and stronger reactions to the problem, and you know, enter in all these people I mentioned, and you as well. Like we have all these supposedly kosher, so to say, commentators and whatnot, and they get all this money and there's all this attention. And yet, it's still lacking much info to spark a revolution, which is clearly what we need.
Right, we do. We need a revolution. I think the revolution is going to be a truth revolution. It's not, and we can, you know, we can bring this whole Jewish lie money system down without even firing a single shot. It's just like we're doing on Renegade, you know, the truth, to get the truth out there, and eventually it's going to sink in because we're you know, the vibration of the planet are changing now. We're coming into a new age. And it's not as easy to pull the wool over the eyes of people anymore. And I really think we can do it without a single. I mean, possible, not good, but I think it's possible because the people are looking for the truth now, and they're hungry for the truth. I have a poem I'd like to read. Do you mind if I it's just a short poem? Can I read it to you?
Please go ahead.
Okay, this is a poem by Arthur William Edgar O'Shaughnessy. It's called We Are the Music Makers. We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams, world losers and world forsakers upon whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. With wonderful deathless ditties, we build up the world's great cities, and out of a fabulous story, we fashion an empire's glory. One man with a dream at pleasure shall go forth amid and conquer, shall go forth and conquer a crown. And three with a new song's treasure can trample an empire down. We in the ages lying in the buried past of the earth built Nineveh with our sighing and Babel itself with our mirth. And overthrew them with prophesying to the old of the new world's worth. For each age is a dream that is dying, or one that is coming to birth.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's really apropos, I think, to what is going on now. You know, because mm-hmm. this is a new age that's coming to birth. And we're birthing it right now. I hear all everyone renegade, you know. And yeah, I think that our victory is inevitable. I mean, really. I mean, I think we, you know, see the Third Reich essentially was going against history. In history at that time, we were still in the old age.
Yes.
And now we're in a new age, and the energies are moving in our direction, not their direction, not the direction of the Jews, but the direction mm-hmm. of the Aryan.
Yeah. Absolutely, and to think that the world, I mean, world whites in general, all the white countries, if they're going to tolerate all the Jews in their countries, outside of their countries, in these international cabals and open groups that they can research for themselves, these all Jews, saying that their race is evil and needs to be culled and needs to be changed and needs more homosexuals teaching their kids, whatever, they're not going to tolerate it. And then to think about all the ethnic people who don't have their own countries, the Kurds, the Chechens, all the problems they're causing, and they want autonomy, they want sovereignty. The Persians in Iran, under the yoke of a disgusting Islamic Republic. I mean, what a joke! That place was converted a long time ago. I mean, they're. And to think that the Persians are Arabs, that's another thing that people need to understand.
Hold on a minute. What do you mean a disgusting Islamic Republic? I don't go along with you there because they are – Iran is at the forefront of the fight against the Jewish money. And remember, in Islam, they do not believe in usury. You see what I'm saying? It's in the Quran. There's a lot of – I'm a pagan. I'm not a monotheist.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at least the Iranians are the only country. I mean, they're the real Aryans now because the white man isn't standing up. The Aryans, the Iranians are only people who are standing up for the Jews now.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the president was the one to, in contrast to Ahmadinejad, the new one.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He was the one to say that, you know, anyone who says anything against the story of the Holocaust is wrong and bad, and he made that statement. So that is one of the tricks that they're pulling right now. I think it seems as though he's one of these characters again who's trying to push that whole narrative. But then there's the issue of if the people in Iran want to be lumped into one political entity, fine. They're outside of the Imperium. What they do, what they will. But I know of a bunch of Persians who have huge problems with the way the revolution was carried out to create that republic there today. Our countries, our intelligence agencies, rather, totally involved with changing the borders of the Middle East, screwing around things, setting it up 50 years later to come back in after a couple of world wars to say what we will and carve the borders up and take the resources that we need and tell the people how they're supposed to live, give them democracy because they want that so badly in the Middle East.
Right.
And to say also what I think could work is perhaps equating the efforts of the foreign policy, that is, of the United States and the Israeli axis, so to say, of
evil.
Right. Oh yeah. The actions of it in the Middle East, it mirrors what they were doing in Europe. They went into France. They went into Germany. They told them, "Wow, this is the wrong way of conducting a civilization. You need to do it this way. Actually, we're going to carve up your country into two, and then, you're not going to have a civilization anymore, and it's just like the 30 Years' War all over again, where the rest of Europe, which have its countries and monarchies and religion taken over by Jews, telling their people what to do, telling them what their that is, the Germans, what to do with their land. As well as the Soviet Union, which is in operation at the time, had a huge part in the destruction of the Third Reich, which galvanized, led by Jews.
The Soviet Union had a large part in the construction of the Third Reich? How do you mean?
No, in the destruction, I said, yeah.
Oh, destruction, okay, yeah. I think Hitler made a mistake when he invaded the Soviet Union. I think that could have been avoided. And National Socialism would have triumphed without the war and against the Soviet Union. Stalin actually, Stalin was pretty savvy about the Jews. I mean, remember under Lenin? I mean, that's when they had the Jews were totally in control. I mean, they had total degeneracy, just like we do in the United States today, or just like they did in the Weimar Republic.
Well, he was a deranged careerist. He has the most statues of himself in history. I mean, this guy, all he really has to claim is his ambition, his unrelinquishable drive for power,
and he got it.
He had to, make concessions and staff his whole fucking government with Jews,
The point I'm trying to make is that he did away with some of the extreme excesses of Jewish Bolshevism under Lenin. In other words, he restored a marriage, sanctity of marriage. He outlawed abortion, outlawed homosexuality. And instead of the stupid modern art, he had the socialist realism, which is
yes.
very similar to the National Socialism, and the architecture.
Yes,
they had the classical architecture. And that's what I mean. Of course, the thing is, he was egalitarian. He decided Lysenkoism, the idea that inherited learned characteristics can be passed on genetically, and such bullshit as that. But nevertheless, he was juice savvy. In his life, he had his doctor's party. He was getting ready to send all the Jews to Siberia, and probably the Jewish doctor assassinated him. What I'm saying is, I think they could have somehow Hitler and Stalin could have come to some kind of a common cause where to avoid that horrible catastrophe of the Second World War, especially the war on the Eastern Front.
Well, I believe that entity needed to be destroyed, and the reason why Stalin did those things, I believe, is the fact that his constituency, his subjects, rather, were Ukrainians, Russians, Polacks. These are traditionalist people these are deeply religious people at times, and a huge portion, especially in the 30s and 40s, really religious. Now they don't have religion. Now they just have the state. How do you replace that? Oh, you replace that with huge symphonies and the ballet, which was already a part of Russian culture, and the grandiose displays of architecture, which was spiraling out of influence, basically, in Britain and France. They were done with their advancements in architecture. And after that era, towards the 60s and 70s, they went towards the modern route and went really Jewy. So as a bulwark to that, the Soviet people running the Soviet Union knew that they needed to satiate, in a way, the Eastern Slavs, who were, again, very traditionalist and wouldn't stand for a bunch of homosexuals parading in the streets like we do in the really, really Marxist entity, the true Soviet Union that is our country. Which is
right, absolutely. Are you familiar with Francis Parker Yockey? He wrote the book Imperium.
Yes.
Okay, now, he said that Jewish capitalism is a greater threat than Jewish Bolshevism. And I agree with him. I think capitalism, high finance capitalism under the Jews is a much worse threat to our race than communism ever was. I mean, look at the Soviet Union.
It showed itself in the form of how it basically made itself the new the ruling entity of the United States at the turn of the century in the 1910s. That was a turning point, and then the Jews knew that they could create another sphere of influence in the East in the form of a populist communist revolution in Russia, because they knew those people were fed up with the czars to a point, and they were starving, and they needed work, and they knew they could exploit that, and they did. Yeah, I mean, but we're gonna wrap it up here, Jim. Thank you for the call, insightful as always. Thank you. We're going to wrap it up here. This is the 21st edition of Ragnarok Now on the one and only Renegade Broadcasting. The next time you will hear me, I will be calling in live to some broadcast next week. I will be on the road show. I will prepare myself in the upcoming days and report to you live in whatever form I may, the chat room perhaps, or through email, or some other way. Don't hesitate to email me at any point during the roadshow. I'll give you a live exclusive update what's going on. That is, and my email is siegfrieds.1700@gmail.com. Look up ragnaroknow.com at the top right, the contact tab. You can find that there. Again, this is Ragnarok Now. Ave Europa. Stay safe. Thank you.